Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Right, hello New Zealand and welcome to another episode of Turn the Page. My name's Mark Pacey from the Wired Up Archive. Today we're on chapter 10 of Don Farmer's second book. Chapter 10, Happy Days at Cross Creek. It was enough to give you the willies. The mothers of Cross Creek, washing dishes at the kitchen sink on a quiet Sunday morning, heard a thumping sound as something came hurtling into view, accompanied by the squeal of children. It had been heard before, always on a Sunday, when the work schedule at the tiny railway settlement, hidden away in the hills in rural Featherston, was not as busy as on other days. Downhill from the incline, on which heavy fell engines laboured up and down, a flat-topped trolley at breakneck speed laden with children hanging on for dear life. It shot into the railway yard, up the railway track and crashed through a blackberry gorse before coming to a halt. On board was young Will Holmes and a gaggle of other risk-takers. All got away unscathed as they had before, with the most likely injury being a tongue-lashing from their startled mothers. Earlier, the children had banded together to hijack the railway flat top and push it up the incline until it got to the stage where they were exhausted and the trolley flatly refused to go another inch. Then the trick was to make sure all of those who had laboured to get the trolley up the incline were able to quickly jump on board or be dragged onto the flat deck before the trolley started its journey back downhill, increasing speed at an astonishing rate. Will had arrived at Cross Creek, or the creek, as its inhabitants called it, when he was 7 years old, his first memory of the railway settlement being gazing at a calendar on the living room wall of the house the family had been allocated. It was 1944. It was in stark contrast to where he had been living previously. He had been born in beautiful Opua in the Bay of Islands, then moved with his family to Te Kuiti, Ohakuni and Taihape, where he had started school. Taihape might not have been the mecca of the earth, but it was almost cosmopolitan compared to Cross Creek. Will's father, Ray, was a career railwayman who had been born in Petaone in 1907, at a time when his father, Edwin, Will's grandfather, was employed as a New Zealand railway blacksmith at the hut workshops. Edwin Holmes left the railways to take on farming at Maihihi, near Otorohanga, where circumstances combined to force him off the block. The Great Depression, or slump as we called it, along with an invasion of ragwort and an explosion of rabbits, drove him off the land. He sold his stock and moved to Auckland to become a jobbing carpenter, Will recalls. Unbeknown to Will's grandfather, that decision was paramount in shaping his young grandson's future. Every second Christmas, Dad would take us by rail from Cross Creek to Wellington, and then by the overnight express to Auckland to spend time with Grandma and Grandpa in Avondale. Grandpa had a huge shed, which was knee-deep in wood shavings, the walls adorned with tools. I loved it, and those visits sealed my ambition to become a carpenter. But that was in the future. Meanwhile, as a kid, Will had plenty to do, being just that, a kid living at Cross Creek. Give a kid a creek and you can guarantee he or she will spend a large part of their life either in it or alongside it, and Will was no exception. We spent hours and hours having fun at the creek that meandered through the valley. We fished for eels and other small fish and became pretty adept at catching crawlies. Sometimes we would catch a billy full of crawlies, light a fire and cook them up with a few eggs that we'd borrowed from Dad's chookhouse. The isolation of Cross Creek did not mean that the children could dodge around going to school, and everything that came with it. Cross Creek School gave the kids a good grounding in their primary school years, with the older children able to catch the school train, which took them to Wairarapa Upper College and the like in Masterton. The primary school was well catered for, as any small school in the country, with good teachers like Mrs. Cody, Hugh McKenzie and Jack Porter. Mrs. Cody was my first teacher at the creek. I'm not sure whether she was a widow. I can't remember there being a Mr. Cody. Hugh McKenzie was next, and then Jack Porter, He was my last teacher. He was an excellent teacher, made a big impression on me, Will said. Other teachers were to follow, including Warren Thompson and Arthur Gibson, both relieving teachers, and Bill Parsonage. Will's brothers and sisters were taught by Bill Peters, of whom they had fond memories. He was the last teacher at Cross Creek, and in later life became a great supporter of the Fowl Engine Museum in Featherston. Over the years, the school built up a comprehensive library, and eventually the jewel in the crown, a swimming pool. Well, it wasn't your run-of-the-mill pool with concrete sides and bottom. Instead, the men of Cross Creek banded together to dam the creek alongside the school, creating a wonderful natural freshwater pool. No chemicals needed or even considered to ensure water quality. Adam's wine came gushing straight from the hills. Even in hot summer months, it was cold. Not just cool, it was cold. But the children of Cross Creek were the original hardy bunch. Dipping a toe in the water was off the menu. The only way to get wet was to dive in and take what was coming to you. It was heaps of fun in the pool. There was even some competition. My sister Joy managed to get an achievement certificate for several distances of swimming in that pool, Will said. Joy, one of Will's five siblings, the others being Robbie, Ian, Barbara and Lynn, was 14 months younger than Will, but far more academic. In fact, she moved ahead of me and started her secondary schooling at the same time I did. Ray Holmes taught his children how to play tennis on the town's tennis court and table tennis in the social hall. Table tennis was a big draw card, not only for the youngsters, but also for the railwaymen and their wives. I don't think I reached the great heights as a player, but I certainly enjoyed the game, Will recalls. For the men and women of the creek, it was not all work and no play, but it was a case of having to band together to make your own fun. Dances and Dances and ochre tournaments were held in the social hall, where there was a drama club and a women's afternoon tea group. Rugby and cricket were played, school picnics and concerts were organised, and at New Year, the close-knit community got together for celebrations that included first footing on New Year's Eve. Hunters had plenty of prey, with wild pigs and goats galore, sharing the bush that enclosed the settlement. For the railway workers living and working at the creek, it could be thirsty work, and along with bread, milk, meat and groceries, and mail deliveries coming in from Featherston and beyond, a steady supply of beer was looked on as a necessity. Stacks of empties were piled at the backs of houses and on barren land accumulating over the years, to the stage where they really needed to be cleaned out. That was when an enterprising Indian entrepreneur arrived at the creek and offered to take the empties off their hands. It was said at the first property he arrived at, he collected 1,000 empties, and at the next, 1,400. At the end of the week of bottle collecting, he had crated up 6,500 beer bottles. In her memories of Cross Creek, Will's sister Joy tells of how her father let off steam away from the job. Ray would occasionally cobber up with other rugby fans and journey to Featherston to watch a match. It was something of a treat for Ray to get out with the boys, and when he did, time seemed to slip by. The group would turn up back at home much later than planned, and more boisterous than when they'd left, with Ray being the happiest of all. His stock comment on peeping through the door would always be, "Where's my tea?" At the end of one particular boozy trip into Featherston, it was soon to be written into a Cross Creek legend. Ray and his mates had spent the day marking out a rugby ground on a nearby farm for an upcoming game. Job done, thirst took over and the men pooled what money they had and decided to make a trip to Featherston pub to replenish their energy. With the money now gone, Ray had little trouble convincing the barman to put a round of drinks on the tab. And then another round, and another, and another. After all, the Cross Creek men were well known to the pub owner and trusted it to eventually pay. Closing time came and darkness descended. At home in Cross Creek, Jessie Holmes' patience was fast running out. She had made a pot of tea and sat, sipping and fumed over the lateness of the hour and no sign of Ray. As she moved us outside to empty the teapot in the garden, she saw the truck lights bobbing towards the settlement and before long could hear boisterous singing and catcalling. She nipped back inside, still clutching the half-full teapot, and put it back on the scullery bench. Within minutes, amid a lot of noise and high-spiritedness, Ray arrived at the back door, opened it, and right on cue, called out, "I'm home. Where's my tea?" Jessie replied, "Here's your tea, and I hope you enjoy it." And she threw the contents of the teapot towards him. Ray was fit and nimble and ducked. Ted Langford, standing by him in case he needed moral support, copped the entire contents in his face. The highlight of life for boys at Cross Creek was being able to convince the fell engine drivers to pop them into the cab and take them up the incline. Ray Holmes would from time to time take Will up. Actually, being able to take a trip up the incline in a fell remains one of the most vivid memories of my life. The memory of the fells charging up the incline at the start of the journey, the slow, powerful ascent with the firemen continually feeding the firebox and in the tunnels. Dad would prepare me for the short journey through each tunnel. He soaked mutton cloth in cold water and wrapped it around my face and then told me to get down on the floor of the cab wedged between his legs. The steam from the smoke and the incredible heat, which made it feel like your lungs were on fire, was something I've never forgotten. The two lower tunnels were the worst. Although the summit tunnel was far longer, it was flat and the engines were not under full steam, so it was pleasantly cooler. There was never a lot of room in the cab, especially when the fowls were being coaled up to make a trip up the incline. The coal was shoveled directly into the floor of the cab. The firemen had to shovel it straight off the floor and into the firebox. One trip in the cab of a steam engine, this time an AB, had an unexpected outcome. Ray Holmes had been rostered to provide backup for goods and service between Featherston and Cross Creek. I was overdue for a haircut, so Dad took me to the barber in Featherston. He had no sooner started to cut my hair than he stopped, let me out of the chair and chastised me. He said my hair was full of coal dust, which had obviously blown into me from the coal bunker of the train. I can't remember now whether I actually got my hair cut that day or not. As Will developed into a well-muscled teenage boy, he never took his eye off the ball when it came to realising his ambition to become a carpenter. But he knew to achieve that, he would need tools. Good quality, expensive tools. There was only one way to get them, and that was by putting his shoulder to the wheel and earn the money he needed to buy them. Granted, Cross Creek was a small, isolated settlement, but Will nutted out a way to put cash into his pocket. He became a part-time woodcutter and possum trapper. In the colder months, he spent as much time as he could trapping, curing skins, and then selling them. It was hard work, but it was profitable. Will had two choices for buyer, Beta Brothers in Masterton and Joe Saber in Featherston. He sold to both, but preferred to sell to Joe. Beaters would sort through the skins and buy the best, but Joe always gave me a price across the line. I remember one day Dad invited Joe for a cup of tea. Joe had plenty of weight on, and he was able to squeeze himself into a padded chair we had, which had arms on it. Dad quipped to Joe that he should take up trapping to get rid of some of his bulk. Joe giggled and replied, "Ray, I trap the trappers." By trapping possums at Cross Creek, Will was following in the footsteps of other boys who kept themselves busy hunting wildlife. Many years before Will's time as a trapper, Robert Hope, born at Cross Creek in 1880, was up to become a career railwayman and ended up as general manager of New Zealand Railways, roamed the hills and creek shooting native pigeons, rabbits and catching freshwater crayfish. His father had started to work at the creek as a fireman and then spent nearly 25 years as an engine driver before being promoted to locomotive foreman. How much more pages have we got? We'll do two more, then we'll take a break. He was a crack shot and earned a reputation as a great pig hunter. As a lad, Robert once stood outside the back door of the Hope family home to be confronted by two large wild pigs, rummaging around only a yard or so from him. Thankfully, for the young boy, they bolted. In Robert Hope's day, days at Cross Creek, the bush was alive with birds, including the now extinct huia, which he used to chase and try and catch. When the summer came, trapping was put aside as the quality of the skins deteriorated, and Will turned his attention to woodcutting. His uncle, Ali Gooding, owned a farm not far from the settlement, surrounded by acres of manuka to fell for firewood. As the money rolled in, Will bought tools and stashed them away for when he would become a chippy. To attend college, Will had to go by train each day to school, on what was loosely called the school train. The train picked up school kids from Cross Creek and all the other stops until reaching Masterton. By the time we got there, the train was full. There was a lot of kids. We got off the train at Reynolds Street stop, and then we would walk to Whited Upper College, a distance of about half a mile. Don't know why I paused there for a second. It was a good school academically, but didn't have a large time to participate in sports and many other school things because we had to catch the train, having again walked back to Reynolds Street Station. We didn't get back home in Cross Creek until 6 o'clock. The trip home took far longer in the mornings in school train, and it was not exclusively for passengers, but was a mixed train, meaning it doubled as a goods train. Will bided his time at college, his focus still firmly on becoming a carpenter. But when the time came for leaving the education system approached, he blundered. The day I turned 15, I packed up my books and arrived home to tell Dad I had left school. I was now ready to start the serious part of my life and start an apprenticeship. Ray was far from impressed, but not as unimpressed as Will soon became. Horrors of horrors. I discovered in order to take up an apprenticeship, I had to have completed 2 years of secondary education. So with my tail between my legs, I had to return to college and wait out the 2 years. Okay, we've got a couple of pages. So we'll take a break now. I'm going to play a piece of music of one that I just... Recently, I watched a documentary, because I'm about to make my own one, so I'm watching as many other ones as possible for inspiration, and I watched a New Zealand documentary about a particularly iconic song. If you haven't seen this doco, I definitely recommend it. Very well made, very informative, very entertaining. This is Poie by the Pātea Māori Club. We'll be right back. that was the brilliant Poye by the Patea Māori Club. If you haven't seen the documentary, watch it. It's really, really good. Delvanius Prime knew exactly what he was doing with that song. And you can hear the original. It was actually, I think it was just a ukulele and vocals. Very different. Right, moving on. Otherwise, I'll spend the next 10 minutes talking about that. While on a visit to his uncle's farm, Will met Heck Barker, who was building a farm shed. I spent time working for him on the shed and told him about my yearning to be a carpenter. To cut a long story short, he took me under his wing and I joined a small team. Heck was leading, doing the maintenance work for the Wellington Education Board. He was an excellent tradesman and an excellent teacher, and from that grounding the die was cast. I became a builder. The Holmes family remained living in Cross Creek, but the death knell was being sounded on the unique little settlement. Construction of the Remutaka Tunnel, one of the biggest engineering construction projects in New Zealand's history, was writing the last chapter of life at Cross Creek and was about to consign the fell engines that worked the incline to history. With a hole punched through the hill, a new era for train travel, and the preparations for the closure of the incline, and with it, Cross Creek got underway. It was an emotional time for the families who had lived, and many still living at the Cross Creek. All realised they had to bow to progress. The old steam trains were outdated, and the new journey to Wellington and the Hutt Valley would be far easier and more comfortable. There was no doubting that. But what was hard to swallow was the fragmenting of a remarkably close-knit little settlement that had laughed, loved, cried and toiled together for decades. Ray Holmes and Jessie Holmes were among the many railwaymen and their wives who had reason to quietly reflect on their lives at the creek and to ponder the future. For Ray, the closure brought an end to his third and by far longest stint at Cross Creek. He had first arrived there as a single man in the mid to late 1920s as a cleaner. The railway fraternity regarded Cross Creek as one of the most dismal postings in the country. There was no electricity, only carbide lights, and most men lived in close proximity to each other in an old boarding house. It was windy, especially at the summit, cold and wet in winter, a natural settling pond for coal dust, and grim and beset with choking smoke. Being a railway cleaner was not work that the name first suggests. Ray was not issued with a feather duster or instructed to polish the silver. Cleaning involved raking out the ashes from the smoke boxes of the fell engines when it came down off the incline. Cleaning the motion gear under the engines, helping to coal up the fells and other unenviable tasks. Ray owned a motorbike and on a tiki tour met up with the Gooding family at Western Lake. He soon found himself enamoured with Jessie Gooding and took a punt. He asked her father, William, for his daughter's hand in marriage. William refused. Jessie, he said, was still too young. Looking back, Will reckons the fact that Ray was at the time still a cleaner hadn't enhanced his chances in the eyes of William Jacob Gooding. With his tail between his legs, Ray transferred away and was working in Napier, still as a cleaner, when the big earthquake struck. Soon he was back on transfer to Wellington and then found himself back at Cross Creek for his second shift there. Jessie was by this time 21, and William Gooding couldn't use age as an excuse anymore, so Ray got his bride. He took transfer to Apua, where he at last became a fireman, then to Tukuiti, and then on to Ohokuni. The move to Ohokuni was a good step up. Ray became a qualified engine driver. He and Jessie were by this time proud parents several times over. They took a wartime transfer to Taihape, spending 3 years there with Ray working long hours, mostly night shifts, and eventually they landed back at Cross Creek. The creek was probably still regarded as the last place God thought of by some of the newbies who had arrived to work there, but for Ray it was greatly improved on his earlier stints. For starters, the settlement had an electricity supply. Ray and Jessie were happy amongst their own again and knuckled down to raise a family of 3 girls and 3 boys. This time the couple were to outlive the creek itself, being there right to the end of its life. The final chapter in the life of Cross Creek was really written on November 3rd, 1955, with the official opening of the rail tunnel held at Speedy's Crossing on the outskirts of Featherston. Hundreds came along to be a part of history and to bid farewell to the era of the Fells, which had struggled over the incline since 1878. Stan Guzman, Minister of Works in the Holland government, spoke glowingly of the effort that had been put into constructing the longest tunnel in the British Commonwealth, proclaiming the day to be an historic occasion. The last passenger train out of Cross Creek had actually been a few days prior, being an excursion train put on for a Carterton show day. The men and women of Cross Creek, including many who had been and gone from their years early, gathered in the old settlement to sign off in style. Many a beer was drunk, handshake and kisses were swapped and tears shed. Thankfully, at least one fell, H199, was saved from destruction and was promised to the people of Featherston. It took pride and place in a park near the town centre, clambered over by thousands of children and quite a few adults for years before it was realised it should be housed properly for future generations. That led to the establishment of the Fell Engine Museum. The opening of the rail tunnel did not single the end of work at the creek for the rail. I will start again and I'll try and slow down slightly. The opening of the rail tunnel did not signal the end of work at the creek for Ray Holmes, though. He stayed working there along with his fireman, Ted Cohey, for 6 months, taking track workers up the incline to dismantle the rails, work that included releasing the unique centre rail essential for the Fell engines to cling to get traction. The rails were towed down the yards, along with those that ran out as far as Speedy's Crossing, and were cut up into shorter lengths. Likewise, tons of sleepers had to be lifted and brought down the hill. Ray Holmes, therefore, became the last driver to drive H199. The railway men of Cross Creek went their separate ways. Ray Holmes shifted to Masterton and worked on diesel trains and rail cars until he retired in 1965. In 1997, Phil Clint, who had arrived at the creek with his family in 1946 and was an old boy of Cross Creek School, organised a Cross Creek reunion, which brought 125 people back to celebrate each other's company, reminisce, and generally let their hair down. It was a great success, but there had been a few surprises. Phil knew full well the creek had been a place famous not only for the Fell Railway, but also for the huge amount of beer consumed, and he preempted this by ordering 8 kegs. Lo and behold, only 2 kegs were drunk. It was only then that Phil realised big drinkers slow down as they get older, and that drink-drive laws also had an impact. So, 42 years after the rug was pulled out from under Cross Creek, the most popular reunion drinks were fruit juice, Diet Coke, and lemonade. Who would have guessed? Back in 1955, on November 2nd, and 3 days before the official closure of the settlement, teacher Bill Peters had put pen to paper. He wrote, "Today is the last day of school here in Cross Creek. This time last week there were 23 pupils. Today only 10. These are Robert Holmes, Ian Holmes, Barbara Holmes, Lynette Holmes, Ian Tonks, Vicky Tonks, Roy Powell, Jeanette Powell, Murray Niven, and Wayne Niven. It is fine today but very windy, just like the day I arrived. When I first stepped off here, I thought, what a dreadful place, but somehow I have grown very attached to Cross Creek, and I shall be very sad to leave. I'm sitting alone in the schoolroom writing this, the last entry in the log of Cross Creek School. The children have gone home for the last time, and the building is left to its memories. The walls are bare, and everything is packed and ready to be taken away. Soon there will be nothing left of the school, through which many hundreds of children have passed, and it will be deserted. I have been here just 6 months, but I feel I have been here many years. It is not the appearance that makes the place, but the spirit within it. In a few minutes I will be walking out the door for my last time. I will always remember my stay here as being a very pleasant one, and Cross Creek will always have a soft spot in my heart. To Cross Creek I say, thank you, and goodbye. With Cross Creek written off the map, it didn't take long for it to disappear. Some houses and other buildings were sold and moved off to various locations throughout Wairarapa and beyond. The more derelict were simply demolished. Fittings from the houses, such as baths and hand basins, were sold off, or in some cases just wrenched off and carted away. Although Bill Peters had claimed everything at the school had been packed up, it was not quite right. Visitors who walked into the settlement pushed up the front window of the schoolroom, finding books and journals there still stamped with Cross Creek School, and took them as mementos. For years after the closure, bottle collectors probed the ground around where the homes had stood alongside the railway tracks to find bottle pits. All matter of bottles, blue castor oil, marble bottles, pot lids, inkwells were uncovered. Worn-out brake shoes from the fells that once gripped the rails were collected, along with artillery shells that had been part of an army exercise at the creek. Finally, when the old settlement had been more or less raided to exhaustion, it was left alone to grow gorse and blackberry. Eventually, it was recognised as being a worthwhile adventure spot for walkers and cyclists who now ride the old inclined track through the tunnels. Will Holmes stayed true to his love of carpentry, becoming far more than a chippy. Living in Greytown, he worked as a jobbing carpenter before teaming up with Graham Rigg to establish HR Builders, and later, when Graham left to pursue other business interests, the firm's name was changed to Will Holmes Limited. Will took on journey as well as... Will took on joinery as well as building work, and the firm went from strength to strength. His two sons, Tim and Andy, joined him in the firm, making for another name change, Holmes Construction Limited. Will retired in 1996, having devoted his entire working life to carpentry, a love he first discovered as a young boy from the creek in his grandfather's Avondale shed, with the smell of wood in his nostrils, treading among the pile of wood shavings on the floor. And that's it. That's the end of that chapter. We've got two left. So, yeah, so two more weeks, and then we'll have to go back to doing something else. So that's me done for the day. We will catch up with you next week, next Monday. Have a good week. Look after yourselves, and we'll see you then. See you later.